Welcome to the Court of Appeals. I'll ask the marshal to reintroduce the panel, please.
Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Kirk, and Judge Cochran. The Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And good morning, everyone. For a few more moments, it's morning yet. This is the fourth of our five matters that we're considering by oral argument this morning. This matter is file A210522 in the matter of the welfare of the child of FJV as parent. And counsel, you should all be able to see the clock in the corner. It is set at 10 minutes because I've been told that appellant, just like respondents, have divided time. And so I understand Mr. Fidler will be going for 10 minutes, Ms. Osband for 5 minutes. And so that'll be noted on the clock. And then respondents have done the same sort of division, I understand, between Mr. Boulette and Ms. Lynch. And so we do ask that you identify yourself for the record when you begin your comments. And if at any time we lose you because of electronic type of issues, then the marshal knows to pause and we'll wait till we get you reconnected. And for all those listening, any recording is prohibited of this proceeding, but we do have a recording and will be available on the court's website within 24 hours. And so whichever counsel for appellant is doing the first 10 minutes, you may identify yourself and proceed, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Mark Fidler, and I represent the appellant interveners in this case, DH and GH, and they are the adoptive parents of three of the siblings to the child who is the center of this case, LJ. Your Honor, we will be arguing two issues today. The district court erred as a matter of law in holding that good cause did not exist under 25 U.S.C. 1911B of the Indian Child Welfare Act to deny transfer of the proceedings to Red Lake Tribal Court. And secondly, that the district court erred as a matter of law in dismissing the third party custody petition. I'll be taking the first issue. My partner, Rachel Osband, will argue the second. As to the first, Your Honors, the district court plainly erred in finding good cause did not exist to transfer these 20-month-old proceedings to tribal court. And that 20-month estimate was our count of all the time the child spent in foster care at the time the order to transfer was signed. So transfer to tribal court is governed by 25 U.S.C. 1911B. And we acknowledge that transfer is presumptive to tribal court unless the parent objects or good cause to the contrary is established. And we are convinced that we have established good cause and that the district court erred in finding that good cause did not exist. And so we have two main prongs for our argument that good cause does exist to deny transfer. The first is that the proceedings are in an advanced stage. And that advanced stage analysis harkens back to the initial Bureau of Indian Affairs guidelines that said that motions to transfer should be filed promptly after the tribe gets notice. And here we are 20 months down the road, and I don't know by what stretch of definition prompt exists that would define that as prompt. The main case for advanced stage is TTB.
Counsel, just a quick question. You know, when you say I was 20 months not prolonged, isn't it reality in CHIPS proceeding, at least this is kind of my experience, is oftentimes the tribes don't intervene until we get to the permanency phase because the focus during the CHIPS proceeding is reuniting the children with their parents. Mm-hmm. And it's not often, where the tribe, in my experience anyway, in these kinds of cases, would jump in before we got to permanency, which is quite a ways down the road of your 20 months.
Yeah, and Your Honor, that we might have a different scenario and a different legal analysis. Were your scenario the case before the court? It isn't. This was a case where the tribe intervened at the outset, and several petitions, two termination petitions were filed. They were both dismissed. And if you look at the analysis of your court and RMB, I mean, the court carefully delineated between the different types of proceedings.
That's the adoption proceeding case?
No, there are two cases. Well, RMB is the case that you guys decided. And then it said you have to look, the relevant stage for determining advanced stage is the pending proceeding. And in that case, the court said, hey, you know, this isn't really advanced yet because there's no termination filed. And that's exactly what happened in this case. So the relevant stage in this case is the pending foster care placement proceeding. There is no permanency proceeding filed. There should have been, and had there been one subsequently filed, we might be in a different scenario to argue whether it's advanced or not.
And the first termination file that was dismissed seemed to be within the timelines that are suggested for a child of this age. Is that a fair statement?
Well, there was a petition, but there weren't any of the subsequently required permanency proceedings that were held. You know, the admit, deny, a trial. There was certainly no trial.
Why did that happen that way?
That your guess is as good as mine. You might ask the county attorney that. We don't know why those petitions were both dismissed. But here we are over 2 years, almost 2 years down the road, and we still have no permanency. So we think—
Mr. Fiddler, just to clarify, so there's no, the court uses the phrase that the court dismissed those petitions. So there must be an order somewhere that describes why they are dismissed?
Ms. Lynch might know the answer to that better, but they were on the motion of the county to dismiss. And typically in these cases, like the counties will file termination petitions, and tribes, for various reasons, many of which are cultural, object. And so they request that the termination be dismissed in favor of another permanency petition. I don't know if that's what happened here, but that's just some background for the court. But Your Honors, if you go look at TTB, the Supreme Court clearly used ASFA, the Adoption Safe Families Act. They used the permanency guidelines. They said the permanency guidelines are maximum. And that is the metric, that's the yardstick, how we determine whether a stage is advanced. And in that case,
Mr. Fiddler, wasn't the key in that case, the court really spent a lot of its focus on the fact it was filed. Was it like the day before the trial was to begin on the permanency, or within some period like that? And that was hinges big on the district court's decision and the Supreme Court's decision as well, which right. We don't have here, of course.
Well, yeah, but in TTB, the tribe got notice 8 months prior, and they said you can't wait 8 months to file a motion to transfer. And that's what happened. And the court affirmed the denial of transfer in that case.
Counsel, the Supreme Court did.
With regard to your good cause argument, even if the district court had found good cause, wouldn't it have the discretion to still transfer the matter to tribal court? I mean, doesn't Rule 31.01 subdivision 6 give the district court that discretion?
Indeed, it would, Your Honor. RMB, this court recognized that. But the question is that a discretion totally unfettered, or are there some guardrails? And we think in a case where you've got the permanency guidelines plainly flouted, ASFA plainly flouted, TTB flouted, you know, we think that would be an abuse of discretion. So the abuse of discretion standard would still apply. And even leaving aside the whole advanced stage argument, even if it wasn't advanced and they promptly moved for transfer, the second argument is perhaps more powerful, in my opinion, that the tribe just does not have jurisdiction over non-members. And I cited the Montana case. Our Supreme Court, RS, cited Montana. Montana is the pathway case. And if you look at There's a case called Nevada versus Hicks, 533 U.S. 353. They said that non-member jurisdiction cannot survive without express congressional delegation. And you know, the opposing counsel says, well, ICWA mandates, permits jurisdiction over non-members despite their lack of contacts. But that's, it doesn't, that's not an express statement. And I gave several express examples. And also, you know, even if Congress had permitted it, the question is whether Congress really intended to subject non-members. So our clients are parties in this case. And so did Congress really mean that parties who did not consent to jurisdiction, that never had stepped foot in the I'm assuming they'd never stepped foot on the reservation, no significant contacts, no violations of tort or anything like that committed on the reservation, that the tribe somehow has jurisdiction over them? As our Supreme Court said, U.S. Supreme Court denies due process. That was a famous case. I don't want to trigger any civ pro trauma, but that's International Shoe. And Your Honors, International Shoe says due process prohibits transfer of this case. And I wasn't going to say that, but you must acquit. And if not acquit, reverse the case below. And then I'll turn it over to my partner.
Very well. And in a moment, the marshal will set the clock at 5 minutes. And then Ms. Osman, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I'm Rachel Osband, partner to Mark Fidler, and I'll be addressing the issue of the third-party petition. And we're asking that the court find that the district court erred as a matter of law in dismissing appellant's third-party petition in the April 2nd, 2021 order. Appellants have standing to bring the petition, and it's expressly authorized by the plain language of Section 260C, 0.515 subdivision 4. So that section allows any party to the permanency proceeding regarding the child to file a petition to transfer permanent legal and physical custody.
Ms. Osband, can I ask you, I'm sorry, sure. On that point, the court and it looks like respondents' counsel accept this position that is meant to be an alternate to a first filing of a county petition. Do you know the basis upon which the court, in terms of a statute or case upon which the court made that pronouncement?
I can't tell you why the court made that pronouncement. I can tell you why it's why it's wrong as a matter of law. That precise statute states that any party can bring the proceeding, or if the agency's petition has already been filed, then they must file it at a different timeline. So when you look at 260C.515 and you go to subdivision 4, number 6, there's two options. It states that the party can bring a petition and must file that no later than the date for the required admit-deny hearing, or if the agency's petition is filed. So that expressly provides two avenues, right? There's the avenue of any party bringing their own petition and the timelines that apply in that case. And then there's the alternative avenue where the agency has filed a petition separate from the one that is now being brought, and different timelines apply to that situation. So we have an either or situation here. And I'll point the court to Stern v. Stern, which has been cited by the district court and opposing parties on a different issue, I think inappropriately, but that's 8039 Northwest 2D 96. And in that case, the court stated that the current Juvenile Court Act contains numerous provisions that allow relatives and private parties to seek permanent legal and physical custody of children in CHIPS and permanency proceedings. And in that case, while the Court of Appeals did affirm the dismissal of the third party custody action under 257C, they expressly stated that appellant still had due process rights because she was allowed to bring her own petition for transfer of permanent legal and physical custody under 260C.515. And in that case, there had been no petition filed by the county. It was only the petition brought by the relative. And in Stern v. Stern, the Court of Appeals said, appellant has availed herself of the remedy set forth in section 260C.515, which allows the juvenile court to transfer permanent legal physical custody to a relative.
Ms. Osband, if we were to agree with you that the court erred in not allowing for the filing, would that be a moot point if, unless we agree with Mr. Fidler's position on the transfer?
I don't believe that it would, Your Honor, because it would create actually bifurcated proceedings. The tribe did not move to transfer the third party custody petition to tribal court. I also think that that's not a subject of this appeal. It's not something that was brought up by the district court, and it wasn't a basis for the district court's denial or dismissal of our petition. So I don't believe that that's a matter before the court, but it is not moot in the sense that.
But maybe I'm not following. Forward. But wasn't the third party, the custody petition under 515 brought in the same file that is now the entire matter is transferred to tribal court following the court's dismissal of the filing?
The petition or the motion to transfer to tribal court was only on the CHIPS matter. It was not on the third party petition. The transfer motion came the same day that we filed the third party petition, but it was not a subject to the motion. It was never referenced in the motion. The file number for the petition was not referenced in the motion. It was expressly left out of the motion to transfer.
And thank you, Ms. Osband. We now turn to respondents, and I believe Mr. Boulet will be starting first with 10 minutes. So if you'd identify yourself for the record, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Michael Boulet here on behalf of grandmother and current foster parent, W.M. Your Honor, both Minnesota and federal law recognize concurrent but presumptively tribal jurisdiction for children like LJ who meet the definition of Indian children, but who are not domiciled on the reservation. The district court's transfer of venue here simply reflects an application of both federal and Minnesota law. What we want to spend most of our time focused on this morning, though, is talking about these two independent pathways, because both sets of law, federal and state, mandate transfer in the absence of one of only three conditions. First, is if a parent objects. We do not have those facts here. Second, is if the court's unable or declines jurisdiction. Red Lake has not done so. And so the third is if the court finds that good cause exists. And as you pointed out, Judge Cochran, a finding of good cause by itself does not prohibit transfer. It's simply a basis on which the court can conduct an inconvenient forum analysis and decline transfer if it so chooses. So notably, the two primary cases before this court on transfer, TTB and RMB, both involve district court decisions to grant or decline transfer that were ultimately affirmed on appeal. In TTB, the district court declined transfer, and the Supreme Court ultimately found that was proper. But in RMB, notwithstanding that the Court of Appeals didn't agree with the district court's advanced stage analysis, it nonetheless affirmed transfer as an appropriate exercise of discretion. And that really is the key here, that good cause determinations are factual, they are case specific, and they are case sensitive, and they require the moving party, the party opposing presumptively tribal jurisdiction, to meet a clear and convincing evidence burden. That didn't happen here. Because it didn't happen here, the district court recognized that presumptively tribal jurisdiction. Now, counsel for appellant states that this is a simple matter of applying the Indian Child Welfare Act. It's not. As the district court recognized, we actually have two good cause standards that need to be reviewed here. One that exists under the Indian Child Welfare Act, and one that exists under the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. That good cause standard codified as 260.771, provides only two circumstances in which custody can be in which good cause can be shown. Appellants don't suggest they have either of those circumstances here. Instead, they say this court can ignore the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act and instead simply apply good cause determination from the Indian Child Welfare Act. It cannot. The Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act is determinative of the question here for two reasons. First,
I want to explore with you a little bit whether 260.771 limits the court's consideration to only the two circumstances listed in subdivision 3AB 1 and 2, or whether the statute read as a whole allows for broader consideration, and that those two, 1 and 2, are simply examples of instances where a court may find good cause. So if you look at subdivision 3A, the first sentence says establishing good cause to deny transfer of jurisdiction to a tribal court is a fact-specific inquiry to be determined on a case-by-case basis. So as you mentioned earlier, it's a fact-specific determination. And then B goes on to say a court may find good cause to deny transfer to tribal court if, and then lists clauses, paragraphs 1 and 2. But it doesn't say only if. And given that A says it's a fact-specific determination, isn't it also possible to read this language as being examples of circumstances rather than a limitation? By this language, I mean the language of B, 1, and 2.
I think that's an excellent question, Your Honor. What I think drives the determination to suggest that the legislature intended to provide limiting conditions is that they provide us a specific list. So the legislature doesn't say B1, there's no administrative body, B2, the evidence necessary isn't there, or B3, any other facts and circumstances. Right? The legislature gives us two specific examples. And when the legislature provides specific examples, I think we often in construing statutes assume that those exist to the exclusion of others. What's significant as well about the application of MISFA, the application that appellants ignore, is that it is not overridden by the Supremacy Clause. Appellants suggest they don't have to contend with MISFA here because the Supremacy Clause makes MISFA irrelevant. It does not. Section 1917 of ICWA, so 1921, Section 1921 of ICWA provides that when we have a more protective state standard, we use that state standard. And in fact, in BW, cited in respondent's brief, we have an example of applying a more protective standard from the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act in lieu of a less protective standard from the Indian Child Welfare Act. Key to that distinction, Your Honor, is that ICWA is always a minimum standard. It is never a maximum standard. And when Minnesota steps in to take a more protective stance, we defer to that stance. However, even under the Indian
Child... I know it's a legal argument, but was that argument made to the district court?
I believe the county specifically argued that only MISFA was dispositive of the issue here, is my recollection of the record. Even applying ICWA, though, even applying the minimum federal standard, we don't have a mandated transfer here. First and foremost, because transfer is never mandated, it is always discretionary. This is always a may and never a must. Secondarily, because the law on which appellants primarily rely has all been superseded. The 1979 guidelines on which appellants base all of their late stage arguments were superseded and replaced not once, but twice. First in 2015, and then later in 2016 with the adoption of what we've called the final rule. In place of an advanced stage analysis, Your Honor, we now have a clear and binding federal authority under 25 CFR 23.115B that a petition or request to transfer can be brought at any stage in the proceeding. any stage in the proceeding. And in considering that request, the district court isn't required to conduct an advanced stage analysis any longer. Instead, it's only prohibited from addressing certain specific factors, all of which the court understood here and all of which the district court recognized and didn't use as a basis to deny transfer. When we look to the Federal Register and the commentary provided by the Department of the Interior, what we see is an analysis intended to favor presumptively tribal jurisdiction, which is precisely what the district court did here. So many of these advanced stage claims, including, frankly, the application of TTB at all, don't get us to a reversal here, primarily because the advanced stage analysis is moot. In my remaining minute, and Ms. Lynch may touch more on this.
Mr. Boulette, can I just clarify? So your understanding of that would be binding on a state district court now, if on the morning of a termination trial that a transfer was filed, the court would, under your understanding, be obligated to transfer? And even assuming that the tribe had notice, such as here, 8 to 12 months?
I'm not suggesting, Your Honor, that the state court could never consider the stage of the proceeding, only that it's not obligated to. So if a state court received that petition on the morning of trial, it could consider it. Could it use the stage of the proceeding as a basis to deny transfer? It could, as the court did in TTB, but it can't. But no longer is the late stage analysis a mandatory analysis. Instead of a must, what we now have under new guidance is a must not. With the remaining
Counsel,
40
is
seconds,
that argument consistent with what you were arguing before about how we should interpret section 260.771 subdivision 3A?
It is consistent, Your Honor, because they're two separate statutes. So
oh,
if you're
still talking. Okay, I misunderstood you. Okay, thank you.
One final point in 20 seconds about RS. Appellant suggests that RS says there is no jurisdiction here over appellants in tribal court. That's simply incorrect. RS recognizes and ICWA provides an express congressional recognition of tribal jurisdiction in matters in foster care matters involving their members. That's what we have here. Where Congress has recognized tribal jurisdiction, we cannot say that there is no jurisdiction over these members. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boulette and Ms. Lynch. Would you identify yourself for the record and then you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Mary Lynch with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, representing Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health Department. May it please the court, counsel. I would like to expand just briefly on Mr. Boulette's arguments and certainly would offer to answer any questions.
Before you do that, Ms. Lynch, I am curious because both most of the appellant's briefs all rely heavily on filed but dismissed termination petitions as a basis for why this is not an advanced stage and not a permanency proceeding. Do you know why the two petitions were dismissed by the court?
I don't frankly know the first petition. It did occur when the CHIPS proceedings began. Actually, the parties were on the understanding that it was not an Indian Child Welfare Act case. And it was actually at the time of the CHIPS adjudication, several months into the case, I believe it was later in 2019, that the department became aware that it was likely to be a ICWA case and then notified the court. And so there was an ICWA finding later in 2019 that the ICWA applied. I believe that the first permanency petition was dismissed around that time. The second petition that was dismissed in November of 20, the department I believe that this was in the transcript. There is the transcript for that hearing as part of this record. The department did request to dismiss the petition and did specifically refer at that time to being involved in permanency planning and expected to be filing a transfer of permanent legal and physical custody. That would be, I don't think it's part of the record, but that would be consistent with a practice that Mr. Fidler refers to, that many tribes are reluctant to pursue terminations of parental rights. And as perhaps the court is aware, many proceedings in state court where the ICWA does apply. If reunification is impossible, the alternative permanency is frequently transfers of custody rather than termination of parental rights. So there wasn't an explicit link, but it was referred to, and it was clearly part of the permanency planning process.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would note regarding the applicability of MIFPA that was presented in terms of determining whether or not the trial court needed to address the advanced stage of the proceedings. The department in its motion did indicate that its understanding that in its response to the motions of appellants that the ICWA establishes minimum guidelines and that MIFPA is what in this particular circumstance created the basis for good cause. And that MIFPA is solely focused on the whether or not tribal jurisdiction is available and the modified form and convenience basis. Referring to a question of the court earlier, I would note that as Mr. Boulette indicated, advanced stage could be considered. I think that is as part of an analysis, but is not required proceeding. I think that's not inconsistent with the MIFPA. I think the considerations that are involved in advanced stage could also be considered to be an undue hardship. It's a modified form of convenience doctrine, not a strict just based on a geographical location, for example. I would also note for the court, as I'm sure the court is aware, the 26771 subdivision 3A was added to the statute in 2015. This was several years after a number of cases involving transfer issues. And in that sense is indicative of the legislative intent to clarify and provide greater protections to the standards that had been in play that would be focusing on advanced stage by requiring a consideration of that. Finally, I would note that as addressed by counsel earlier, this case is about a grant of a motion to transfer by the tribe. The father agreed to that motion. The ICWA focuses on protections to the parent, allows the parent to create a veto. That did not happen here. The court clearly considered all the arguments and transferred the CHIPS proceedings. That is what was at issue. There is no under 260C515, which I would argue was not actually presented to the trial court because it was a third party custody motion under 257. The district court was dealing with the CHIPS proceedings before it. Appellant is seeking to get the benefit of saying that those proceedings were advanced, but then by saying that we have to look at the new petition that they're filing, don't get to look at the CHIPS petition for deciding whether or not to transfer. So I think that appellants did not actually have a pending permanency petition before the court under 260C515. And for that, and also the other reasons the trial court addressed, the court did not commit an error that was relevant to the transfer analysis. And therefore, we'd ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And now we'll turn back to the appellants for 5 minutes. And looks like Mr. Fiddler, you'll begin. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Cochran, I wanted to address your critique of 260.771. So opposing counsel has said that there's only two reasons to allow transfer, neither of which exists here. And as you pointed out, the language does say it's a fact-specific inquiry, and that those two reasons are just exemplary. And I would support that analysis, and also point out that the good cause phrase allows for other reasons to be considered. And this court, in the unpublished case, we cited it in our brief, it's called AMG. That was a adoption case, and the court sua sponte transferred the case to tribal court, citing 260.771. And that was based on an amendment. So there were amendments that Ms. Lynch pointed out in 2015 that allowed adoption cases to be transferred. But I actually represented the appellants in AMG, and we pointed out that, again, as here, the district court ignored RS, much to its peril, because this court said RS says you don't have jurisdiction over non-members, and the lack of jurisdiction over non-members is good cause to deny transfer. So this court previously has expressly found that those two reasons aren't the only reasons. You have to look more broadly at the record. And then as to the CFR, the CFRs provide the greater rights here. So MIFPA, I don't see how Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act can take away rights and limit the court to considering things that federal law expressly permit. And so when you look at the Indian Child Welfare Act, it's uh, 25 USC 1921 allows the state to provide a higher degree of protection to the rights of the parent. And interestingly, you know, it doesn't say anything about higher rights to the child, which is what we should be concerned about here. But in any event, there was no finding below that limiting good cause to two reasons provides higher rights to the parent. So that, I don't think that issue is even before the court. In any event, if they want to argue it, it doesn't provide higher rights at all. And then there's kind of this persistent view that whether the case is at a permanency proceeding is somehow the test for determining whether the stage is advanced. And I think I understand that, you know, usually when a termination of parental rights proceeding is filed, that is obviously a permanency proceeding. So in that sense, whether its permanency is relevant, but whether it's a permanency proceeding isn't dispositive. And this court, you got to, I think, re-examine R and B. And there it laid out exactly what the test is for advanced stage. And it said the relevant proceeding is the pending proceeding. And the pending proceeding is a foster care placement proceeding. It is not a permanency proceeding. It is a foster care placement proceeding. And I think, you know, we have to hew to what ICWA says and follow the definition of the child custody proceedings that are defined under ICWA. There's foster care placement proceeding, and then there's termination of parental rights proceeding. And whether you're in one or the other, those are the metrics. I don't agree with it, by the way. From the child's point of view, it doesn't matter. It's all advanced to the child. But such as it is, we are in the pending proceeding is a foster care placement proceeding. And under any definition of advanced stage, we are advanced. And finally, you know, the opposing counsel doesn't want to talk about it, but I don't know how they get around International Shoe and Montana and RS and AMG and Strait and Nevada versus Hicks and Cooley, on and on, the cases that say there's no jurisdiction over non-members. And with that, I'd ask the court to reverse the district court below. Thank you.
Mr. Fidler, one quick question. When we're talking about good cause, you've kind of focused on the length of the proceedings to support your position. Why nothing on 25 CFR 23.132, which supports keeping a child with her siblings when she's been living with three of them for a year?
Well, indeed, Your Honor, we made that argument below that keeping the child with the siblings is actually defined by the CFRs as good cause. So we made that argument, and unfortunately the court didn't agree with us and said that, well, if the child's transferred to the tribal court, you know, they can ensure that the sibling connection is made. And that's an issue for remand, and that's what we vigorously wanted to contest. We think there is an excellent case for deviation from ICWA, and this case is not about where LJ should be placed right now. It's about where that case should be decided. And the fairest forum for that decision is in the state court. Thank you.
One other quick one. You know, under your international shoe, you know, issue on jurisdiction, is the fact that all of the reservations in Minnesota are statutory, federal statutory reservations except Red Lake, which is its own sovereign nation. Does that go in any way to your argument?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. You know, Red Lake is different than the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe or the other reservations in Minnesota. The point is whether the parties had contacts with the forum, and whether it's a 280 res, it's public law 280 is what they're called, or original jurisdiction like Red Lake. The issue is whether there was significant contacts with the forum, and there just aren't any here. Thank you.
Any other questions either of my colleagues have? Very well. We appreciate all the answers to our questions that council have had, and for the briefing that you've submitted to us. We're aware of the expedited basis upon which we will need to make a decision, so we have that in mind as well, and we will adjourn on this matter. All of you have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.